Welcome to the local spotlight show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I am Chris Lorton. I'll be your host today. And my guest, Mayor Mike Morrow of Grafton. Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you, Chris.
Now, should I call you Mike, Merrill, Mayor Mike?
What do you think? However you like. Mike is fine. It's great.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mike, thanks for coming in the studio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Now, you've been mayor of Grafton for how long now?
Since April 21.
Okay. And before we get into that, where'd you grow up? Where are you from, son?
I grew up in Flint, Michigan.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Born in 1951, started out in there in Flint.
What's Flint famous for? Seems like there's something.
Flint's famous for automobiles.
Yeah, that's what
Flint
I thought.
Flint is about 60 miles north of Detroit. Detroit's the automobile capital, but Flint is also, I mean, they made Buicks. They've got Chevrolets up there. I even worked in the factory one time for a little bit right after high school to get money to go to college.
Okay. Did a lot of your family work in the auto industry?
Actually, my father was worked for AC Spark Plug right after World War II. He was a veteran in the Navy, and when he came home, they had a family of 12, and he was going to go to school on the GI Bill. But his mother, and at that time, said you have to go because his father passed away during the war. She said you got to go to work to help support the family. So he went to AC Spark Plug. But his heart was in wanting to be a fireman. So as soon as they had the tryouts for that, he applied. And then he was a fireman in Flint, Michigan for over 30 years.
How big a town is Flint?
Oh, gosh.
What would you guess?
It was bigger back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. It's kind of lost population now since the Detroit's taken up most of the automobile manufacturing. Flint still does it. But I couldn't even begin to guess.
So raised in a family in Flint, Michigan, brothers and sisters?
Yes. I had five brothers and one sister.
Ah, big family. How did you rate in that group?
I was number one.
All right. And well, always been number one ever since?
Always been number one. The first one to get all the good stuff, the first one to get all the bad stuff, but yes.
Okay. So after high school, did you go to college or anything?
Right after high school, I went to work at Fisher Body One, which was the auto plant I mentioned, to get money to go to college because I moved out of the house that summer. So I had to have money to pay for college, and I went to the junior college there for 2 years and did an associate's degree in mechanical design technology. And while I was working while I was going to the college, I quit the factory at that point, and then I moved into the city of Flint. I was working actually for the water department. Got a job as a draftsman.
Okay, yeah. And then where did you go from there as far as...
Well, then I've realized that I joined the Army. Now, one of the things I've done recently, though, is that I've written the first part of my autobiography, which covers all of this in great detail, and it's available on Amazon.
Well, that's great. Now, yes. You went from private to full-blown Colonel, right?
I decided when I was working with the city of Flint that I didn't see any job progression where I was because there was only three people in the department. So I decided at that point, this guy always wanted to join the military, so I went and joined the Army. I walked in as a private. But I was only going to go away for 2 years just to see how it was and, you know, get away from Flint for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up being there. I liked it, so I ended up staying for 30.
What year was that you went in?
That was in 1971, right when Vietnam was still ongoing.
Wondering.
Yep, and when I walked into the recruiter's office, they fought over me.
Oh.
And I remember the staff sergeant was there. He said, "What would you like to do?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I said, I just want to go in the Army, get away for a couple years." And he said, "Well," and I told him, "I just finished my graduate from the junior college. I had my degrees. That afternoon, that morning I graduated." And he says, "Well, I'll tell you what," he says. He showed me this little movie of these combat engineers driving bulldozers and doing all this neat stuff. And he said, "You want to do that?" And I says, "Great." So I did.
And that's what you did?
I did.
Yeah. So now did you have to go over to Vietnam or not?
No. What was happening is, see, I came in under a special program because the city had taught me how to be a surveyor. So I knew how to survey. And so they needed surveyors in the Army, so they sent me to a special school, and I went and did that, and I was promoted to a Spec 5, E5. And then that was in 1972 when I got out. Everybody in the class had orders for Vietnam, but they canceled them the next day, and I ended up going to the 25th Infantry Division over in Hawaii.
Well, that's a nice place to go.
It was a nice place, but not a nice time. That was during the early 70s when they were drawing down. Drugs were rampant. We had there was a lot of racial tension and so forth. And I was in a non-commissioned officer position.
Was that in Hawaii, just in the general public or with the service?
That was in the service. Was in Schofield Barracks in Hawaii with the 25th. Yeah, it was a tough time, a transition time for the military, and
Now at that point in time when you're in Hawaii, were you thinking, I want to stay in the services? Or were you thinking about?
I was sitting there at that point thinking, I'm far away from home. Hawaii sounds nice, but it's like any other duty place when you're a young man. It's like,
Yeah. So. You were a full blown colonel. How many years total were you in the service?
I was in total 33 years. Now, and after I left Hawaii, though, I went to officer candidate school, got selected to do that, and that's when I started my officer career.
Okay. Where did you do that at, officer candidate school?
That was at Fort Benning, Georgia.
I see. And then what happened?
Went from there to airborne school, to ranger school, atomic demolition munitions school, officer basic course. I was gone to schools for a full year. And then I came out as a second lieutenant and started my first job as a second lieutenant as a company commander in a training unit at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, which was an exciting time, too.
Yeah. And then did you get shipped out at any point in time?
I was spent time over in Germany in the early 80s for about 3 or 4 years over there, and then came back. And the first time I had a combat tour was in Desert Storm. That was in 1990. I went in December of 89 when they started the first part and then stayed through the war and finished up over there.
What can you say to young people that may be listening, or maybe older people are listening, but they're thinking about, this might be good for my son or daughter? What do you say about the service?
I loved the service. I tell them that if you don't know what you want to do, and even if you do know what you want to do, joining the service is always a good thing. Gives you discipline, gives you a way to move forward. It shows you how to do things. I mean, the skills that I learned in the military, I'm still applying today.
Yeah, and then when you get out, there's benefits from that as well. I mean, it's a
absolutely. I finished up all my degrees in the military. I mean, I finished my bachelor's degree while I was on active duty. Did that at night, but they paid for it. And then I finished up my master's degree while I was still on active duty. Again, did that on weekends and in the evenings with Central Michigan University. And then even when you get out, you've got the GI Bill to continue your education. So it's, that was back when I was in. I don't know exactly what they have today, but they still have a lot of these great programs that are out there that help you while you're in the service and then help you when you're out, too.
So whenever you retired out of the service after 33 years, did you just retire?
No, or did you... I can't retire. So what I did was I went ahead and started. I always wanted to be my own consultant, so I did that for a while. For about 4 years, and I thought I was going to be consulting on river issues because I was the district engineer for St. Louis as a colonel. But then I ended up doing mentoring for CEOs of organizations and manufacturing companies, aviation companies, that type of thing.
So how did you mentor them? What was your
basically? It just kind of transitioned. What I'd do is I'd meet with.
I mean, what
CEO.
Was your ABCs of mentoring for these guys?
Go into a company and take a look at the company, give them observations on how to improve, how not to improve, HR things. A lot of these small to medium companies didn't have people that they could rely on to do that. And even larger companies, for example, in Graybar Electric, I did there, went in and helped them start their military program right after, as far as funding. So. I did that for about 4 years and then transitioned. I got selected by one of the companies I was working with. He asked me, the boss came in one day and he says, "Would you sell my company for me?" I says, "Okay, I'll do that."
It was a
manufacturing company for aviation and electronics and so forth. So we did. It took about 6 months, but we sold it for $35 million. And what happened then was in the contract for the buy it, they said this contract will only go through if I come on as their president.
So really?
So I said, I'm in the driver's seat. So I did. I quit my consulting job. I took over the company as a president of the company for this organization that bought it. And we had a facility in Bethalto, Illinois, where they did fabrications. And I also did overhauls for military helicopter components. And then in South Carolina, which was the other half of the company, we did manufacturing for Boeing, the military, and even in the nuclear industry.
Okay, is there any timeline now? Are you getting close to being married yet?
No, this is actually, this is what I did this for about 5 or 6 years, and then decided to retire, and came back to Grafton, and ran for mayor and lost. Tom Thompson's regime came in, and then ran again with Rick Eberlein, and then I won that one.
Okay. Now, why did you pick Grafton? Why did you come to Grafton originally?
My wife.
She wanted to come to Grafton.
I didn't know her then, but I met Lynn, and we, you know, she was from Grafton. She had moved. She was born in Washington, D.C., moved out to St. Louis, and then she had a summer home in Grafton, which was the River House, and then basically moved there, and then was moved into the big house, which we call it, which was the old Falker home or the Eastman's home. And so I'd met her. And basically, that was, you know, got me to Grafton.
I see. Yeah. So you've been to Grafton how many years now?
I've been associated with Grafton since 1999 when I was the district engineer of St. Louis. And then I moved to Grafton when we got married in 2007.
Okay. Now, what made you want to run for mayor?
Well, I ran for mayor and lost, and I said, okay, that's fine, and let the other regime run that, which they did, and then I wasn't going to run, but I had one of the aldermen or one of the former mayors at the time come to see me, and he says, we want you to run for mayor. There's a lot of things that are going on, and there was a lot of angst going on in Grafton at that time.
Yeah.
And I told him no. I says, I did my thing, and I said, nobody supported me the last time I ran.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of did it on my own, and he said, no, we're here to help you.
Okay.
So my wife, I was still going to tell him no, but my wife said, Lynn told me, we're sitting on the porch, and she says, you know, if we're going to live here and you want to see things do better, then you ought to do something about it. So I did. And we ran, and, of course, the rest is history.
If you're just joining us, I have Mayor Mike Morrow with me. Mayor Grafton, and talking over some Grafton stuff. Now, did you have any surprises? Did things go just the way you
every
thought
day,
they were
going? Every day, Chris. Every day.
Every day.
I mean, it was, yes, right? You know, from the transition to the way things were going to, you know, every time you turn something over, it's like, well, why are we doing it this way? And I heard somebody say that I watched a thing on Elon Musk. And what he did was he didn't know a damn thing about the SpaceX, you know, as far as his space program and everything. But when he bought that, what he does is he asks questions. And he'd say, who told you that? Well, who told you that? He'd keep following the trail down to where he finally found out where it was either made up or find the guy that originally did it, and then they'd change it if it needed changing. So a lot of the things I did, and even before I even knew who Elon Musk was, I'd come in because I didn't know. He asked the question, well, why are we doing it this way? Well, we've always done it this way. Well, so and again, that brings out a good discussion amongst people and then working with the aldermen, getting those. So it was every day for me for the first couple of years was a learning experience.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, Grafton, we talked a little bit earlier before we went on the air. You said Grafton was one of the fastest growing cities
in the 22 was it called census? Grafton is the second fastest growing city in the state of Illinois.
Second fastest.
Second fastest growing. Yeah.
Who's fastest?
It was I forget Winfield or something up in Cook County.
Mm-hmm. Does that mean there's a lot of building going on, a lot of residential?
There has been. And what we did was we sold, when I came on as mayor, we had 30-plus lots that the city was trying to sell.
I remember this. Yeah. Tell us about that.
And I can't take the credit for it. I mean, they had this program in place as you buy a lot and you build a house and you get
the lot for free.
Yeah, you get your $5,000 back when you build the home and get your permit to move in.
And you were selling the lots for $5,000.
Correct. So typically a lot up there. Now you looked at 20, 25,000. So I mean,
right.
A heck of a deal. But so why weren't they moving? Well, Terry Maddox from the DeBelleville Democrat called me one day and she says, I want to do a story on your lot thing program. I says, great. So I thought she forgot about it because it was about 3 months later. She showed up with her photographer and we took about a half a day and went up and did a nice little expose on the lots and everything. And I remember when I bought the Belleville Democrat and I opened it up and here's a whole regional section on Grafton and it's got my smiling face standing in front of the Grafton sign with the headlines that screamed, Grafton gives away free land. And I thought,
well,
I says, oh my gosh, I'm going to jail because, you know, and I my heart sank. So I started reading this and I went, wait a minute. She got it right.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. Well, I'll tell you what, Stan Gula is our realtor. We've had him for ever since I came on board.
Yeah, I know Stan.
Great guy.
Yeah.
His phone was ringing off the hook. He had over 500 calls just that first weekend. He couldn't keep up with it.
I'll be darned.
And we had them all sold within a matter of a week or so. I mean, continued going through this process with Colonial Title, which is a great title company, by the way. They've done all our work for us with that, too, between Stan and them. And we got them. And we had 19 new homes going up. I mean, in a matter of, so we are the fastest growing. But and what that does is I tell people, we're not making money in $5,000. No, but we are in property taxes.
Sure.
Look at the base that we're building. New families moved in, kids moved in. It's been fantastic.
Okay. Typically, what type of people, what people were buying the lots? Were they people like young people? Were they middle-aged? Were they people, investors wanting to buy one, build one, and sell it?
We had some investors buying. We had one from California, still hasn't built their home yet. We're probably going to turn that one back around. Because what happens in the contract, if you don't build a home within 3 years and the city buys it back for $4,000, and it goes right on because we got a standing list of people that want to buy those.
Ah.
So it just keeps the process rotating. You don't have somebody buying a lot just so they can have an empty lot next to their home.
Ah, so they got to build something on it.
Have to build something on it. It's part of the contract, part of the $5,000 deal.
What if you wanted to buy a lot? I'm just asking. What if you wanted to buy a lot and you just wanted the lot for yourself?
Can't do it. Unless it's a private lot. So there's a lot of private lots that are still up there. So if you want to buy that and just let it sit fallow, have at it. But you're going to probably pay about $20,000 to $25,000 to do that.
Okay. And these were all city-owned lots.
These are all city-owned lots. Correct. Yeah. They were from the FEMA buyout.
And how many were there total? Did you start off with?
I don't know, but I had approximately 35 that we had to sell were left over.
Okay. And there could be some come up. And, you know, like
matter
if people
fact,
don't
just,
build on them.
Matter of fact, I've got a closing again here next week with Colonial Title. So, you know, what happens is that the contracts come due, we check it out, call them up. Or they call us and say, you know, the prices are too high, we can't do it. Not a problem. Resell it. Goes right back on the lot, and Stan Gula turns right around and resells it again.
So what is the population of Grafton now?
Population of Grafton is 720.
720. Okay.
According to the 22 census.
And still growing.
Still growing.
Yes.
But we've got a problem with growing is because we can only expand so much.
Right.
It's like because we've got all these FEMA buyout lots, which are down below. We can't ever do anything with those because they're ours in perpetuity from the 93 flood or when they have a buyout.
Hmm. So what will happen with those? Just
green space forever. Or what we do is we've also have what's called an adopt-a-lot program. And they can, if, for example, if there's a lot next door to you that's a FEMA buyout and you want to buy it, or not buy it, but if you want to adopt it, you can do that. It's typically like $5 a year. But what that does is they now mow the lot, you take care of it, you can do picnics on it, you can park your car, you can do whatever you want to do with that, but you can't build on it. And what that does for us is it takes that lot and all these other properties off the market, so now we don't have to mow them. So it saves us money.
With all this going on and as time went on, has the price of homes in Grafton went up?
Yes.
Considerably?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. What would you say compared to what when you started this program? Because it had to force price up for everybody else.
It does. When they start coming in building brand new homes, you know, I wouldn't even want to venture a guess, but well over, you know, $300,000-$400,000 homes are not out of the realm.
How many businesses do you have in Grafton offhand?
Over 100 businesses. We have over 100 business licenses that we've sent out. A lot of those are Airbnb, but also, too, we have a lot of the businesses that are just, you know, for bars, restaurants, and eateries, and everything else.
And how many people do you get into Grafton on a good weekend?
Well,
in the
during
summertime?
During the fall, when the leaves, that's the high peak.
We can get
over 20,000 cars coming through Grafton just on a Sunday.
Well, that's at least 45,000 people.
That's a lot of folks. And when the ferry's running, that's a fantastic thing. It just, you talk to the business owners, exponentially increases their business.
I have one thing that I do is I have two daughters that live in St. Louis, and they've lived there for a few years. They're young, you know, they're 30s. But we go out to eat. We go anywhere in St. Louis, and You know, if they say where you're from, we start talking. Jerseyville. Don't know about Jerseyville. How about Grafton? Oh yeah, we know about Grafton. We love Grafton. Go to Grafton. Like,
You know, and we've got we have a program with Great Rivers and Routes where they do our digital advertising and so forth, and they do a fantastic job of getting people in from outside of the region. Yeah. And then inside the region, we've had our second ward alderman, Rush Roy. He's been working on a program to do the regular advertising and so forth on paper, and we do that with a lot of the regular folks in town. And not the digital, but just the paper advertising. So, for example, you the Buzz magazine, you get out and see us. There's a big spread on Grafton and that. So I always tell people I like to see both the digital and the paper, because when I go out to eat and you open up, oh, there we are. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Hey, we've ran out of time. Now, one thing we got to talk about, we're going to talk about it on our next episode, and this is National Memorial of Military Ascent. That you've been working on.
Absolutely.
I'm going to let you go now, but I'm going to have you back.
Thank you, Chris.
All right. See you on the streets.
You bet. Bye-bye.